The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the NNO, EpiPen plus cell phone equals lifesaver. From fightingblindness.org, what is Usher syndrome? From Bleeping Computer, Europol police arrest hackers behind 1,800 plus ransomware attacks. From Tom's Guide, Chrome fixes flaws under hacker attacks. BBC has an article about the school that created a city for the blind. And Perkins e-Learning has an app called Number 42TO24. So let's get started. From the NNO last week, EpiPen plus cell phone equals lifesaver. Detroit entrepreneur has food allergies, so he made a life-saving phone case. Dateline Detroit. As a young adult, Javier Evelyn didn't always carry his epinephrine auto-injector, which dispenses the medicine he needs if he has a food allergy reaction. It wasn't cool to carry a clunky piece of equipment, he recalled. I did not carry my device with me at all for most of college, so I was just really fortunate, to be real with you, when it came to not having any big scares, as I was more independent down the road, said Evelyn, 38, a Chicago-area native who is allergic to some tree nuts, finfish, and casein, a protein found in cheese. Evelyn, who has a tech background, moved to Detroit in 2013 and decided to create a more convenient device. His innovation, a cell phone case with an attached epinephrine auto-injector. I really wanted to solve a problem that was personal to me, he said, something I cared deeply about. Being that I have this lifelong problem and I never really carried an EpiPen growing up because I thought it was not cool to carry. Fast forward in Detroit, I'm having conversation with folks that I know, and a lot of folks felt the same way. Evelyn, whose business, Allergy, A-L-E-R-J-E, is based at Tech Town Detroit, was recently granted a patent on the phone case called OmniJect by the United States Patent and Trademark Office. He was also honored by Tech Town as a Toast of Town Salute awardee. And this year, his company received a Small Business Innovation Research Grant Award from the National Science Foundation. Paul Reiser, Managing Director of Technology-Based Entrepreneurship at Tech Town, says he's watched Evelyn's business grow during the past few years and believes his device could be a game changer. I see this becoming a standard of addressing allergies in communities at all scales and all socioeconomic bubbles, Reiser said. An estimated 32 million Americans have food allergies, include 5.6 million children, according to the Food Allergy Research and Education, a Virginia-based nonprofit. Annually, 200,000 people in the U.S. require emergency medical care for an allergic reaction to food, according to FARE. Evelyn said the high number of food allergy sufferers and the experience of managing his allergies led him to create the auto-injector, as well as two apps for food allergy management. It was the convergence of me having this problem, seeing a bigger problem that affects a lot more people, and coming up with a solution, although novel at the time, that essentially could fit in the background, he said. Your device is there when you need it, but it's not when you don't. The OmniJect smartphone case has an attached rectangular auto-injector on the back that is about a half an inch thick. If the owner experiences an allergic reaction, they can inject themselves with epinephrine. The device includes software that will alert the patient's support circle if a dose is discharged. Although it is recommended by doctors that those with food allergies carry two epinephrine auto-injectors with them at all times, people don't always follow that advice, as was the case with Evelyn in his younger days. According to a 2018 study led by health behavior researcher Christopher Warren of the University of Southern California, out of 900 respondents with food allergies, 89% had filled a prescription for an epinephrine auto-injector, but 45% reported not having one with them during a severe allergic reaction. People are less likely to carry their epinephrine with them to parties, sports, activities, and beaches, said Dr. Malika Gupta, a pediatric allergist and assistant professor for the University of Michigan Health System. Concern for temperature sensitivity of the medication and tight clothing are some of the other issues that I have seen that are a hindrance to carrying epinephrine. But it's crucial for patients to have their medication available at a moment's notice. The only effective treatment for a severe allergic reaction, or anaphylaxis, is epinephrine, Gupta said. It is quite literally a life-saving medication. It is also vital to use the medication early in a reaction, hence the importance of having it on hand at all times. Gupta, who has served on allergies medical advisory board since earlier this year, hopes the device will make it easier for people to carry their medication. Bundling this essential medication to something that people carry nearly all the time is a brilliant solution and might influence the willingness of our adolescent patients to carry their epinephrine, she said. Evelyn's work began with the idea for the device and led to the creation of a lifestyle app called Allergy, A-L-E-R-J-E, which is available for iOS and Android. The OmniJect will tie in with the Allergy app, which allows users to track foods that could be dangerous to them. Evelyn and his team are also working on an app to help patients undergoing food desensitization, known as oral immunotherapy, OIT, treatment, to track and communicate their progress with their allergist. He has submitted a provisional patent for that. When developing his company, Evelyn drew from his experience leading app projects for MeridianRx/Meridian Health Plan in Detroit. He is also a founding member of MedTech Color, an Encino, California-based nonprofit organization that works to increase and support people of color in the medical device industry. The group also discusses strategies to increase clinical trial enrollment of underrepresented ethnic groups. He's part of a team of six people working on the device and the app, including developers, marketers, and legal and regulatory consultants. Evelyn said he's working with a large auto-injector maker he could not name because of an agreement. Evelyn said to date, the company has raised close to $2 million collectively for its projects and needs an undisclosed amount to bring it to market. They plan to seek additional Series A financing next year to continue to pursue regulatory approval as well as to develop the OIT digital platform. We believe that with the right partner and building up additional team members, we'll be able to move forward with the commercialization of our device, he said. Reiser sees a bright future for Evelyn and his enterprise. I think Javier has a keen understanding of the importance of obviously entering the market and working with the larger companies who can help him accelerate that pathway. But I also know that Javier will never forget and or dismiss the importance of the cost of healthcare and ensuring that devices and services and solutions like his are also affordable for people at all levels or strata of the economic sphere, he said. I see him growing this company nationwide and beyond. From BleepingComputer.com, police arrest hackers behind over 1,800 ransomware attacks. Article by Bill Toulas, T-O-U-L-A-S. Europol has announced the arrest of 12 individuals believed to be linked to ransomware attacks against 1,800 victims in 71 countries. According to the law enforcement report, the actors have deployed ransomware strains such as LockerGoga, MegaCortex, and Dharma, as well as malware like TrickBot and post-exploitation tools like Cobalt Strike. LockerGoga first appeared in the wild in January 2019 when it hit Altran Technologies, a French engineering and R&D consultant, part of the Capgemini group. LockerGoga and MegaCortex infections culminated during that year with a report from the National Cybersecurity Center, NCSC, in the Netherlands, attributing 1,800 infections to Ryuk and the two strains, RYUK. The most notable case linked to the suspects is a 2019 attack against Norsk Hydro, the Norwegian aluminum production giant, causing severe and lengthy disruption in the company's operations. Today, the Norwegian police posted a relevant announcement saying that they never stopped hunting for the threat actors, working with foreign counterparts to bring them down. The arrests took place in Ukraine and Switzerland on October 26, 2021, and as a result of the simultaneous raids, the police seized 5 luxury vehicles, electronic devices, and $52,000 in cash. As Europol explains, the arrested individuals are considered high-value targets in the sense that they are thought to have spearheaded multiple high-profile ransomware cases. As such, the forensic examination and the interrogations that follow the action will be extensive and may very likely bring up new investigative leads. Highly organized cybercrime organization. The cybercriminals fulfilled specialized roles in a highly organized criminal organization, with each person being responsible for distinct operational aspects. Some engaged in network penetration, others in brute force attacks, while others performed SQL injections or handled credential phishing operations. In the post-infection stage, their roles were transposed to a new domain, with the actors deploying malware, network reconnaissance, and lateral movement tools, carefully stealing data while staying undetected. Eventually, the actors encrypted the compromised systems and left ransom notes demanding the victims pay exorbitant amounts of money in Bitcoin in exchange for decryption keys. Some of the individuals who were arrested now are thought to be in charge of the money laundering operation, using Bitcoin mixing services to obscure the money trace. This operation is a massive law enforcement success, made possible thanks to more than 50 investigators from 7 European police departments, 6 Europol specialists, and members of the FBI and U.S. Secret Service. There is a video attached to this, and related articles are listed as The Week in Ransomware, October 29, 2021, Making Arrests. Ransomware operators behind hundreds of attacks arrested in Ukraine. Lokian multi-ransomware affiliates linked to attacks on French orgs. UK Labour Party discloses data breach after ransomware attack. Black Matter ransomware moves victims to Lockbit after shutdown. Those are all hot links at the end of this article on bleepingcomputer.com. From tomsguide.com. Chrome fixes zero-day flaws under hacker attack. Update now. Article by Paul Wagenseil, Wagenseil. Google, on October 28th, pushed out an update for Chrome on the desktop that fixes 8 security vulnerabilities, including 2 serious zero-day flaws that are already under attack by hackers unnamed. The update takes Chrome to version 95.0.4638.69 for Windows, Mac, and Linux. Windows and Mac users can usually just relaunch the browser to install the update, while Linux users may have to wait until their distribution bundles the update into its regular update package. 70% of Wi-Fi networks are easy to hack. How to protect yourself? Otherwise, you can force a Chrome update by clicking the 3 vertical dots at the top right of the browser window, then mousing down and clicking Help. Click about Google Chrome in the flyout menu that appears under Help, and a new tab will either tell you that Chrome is up to date or will download the update. How these Chrome flaws can be exploited. The first of the 2 zero-day flaws patched involves insufficient validated of untrusted input in intents, a protocol whereby Chrome finds the best web app to handle a particular purpose, cataloged as vulnerability CVE-2021-38000. The other allows inappropriate implementation in V8, Chrome's JavaScript engine, cataloged as vulnerability CVE-2021-38003. Call of Duty Vanguard is finally official. Oops, that's an ad. In this week's Totally Rated, continues in the ad. We're going to guess that the first permits a web app to do naughty things, while the second permits a website to do the same. Google isn't saying anything further. Because the reporters of these flaws all work for Google, they likely won't be getting any bug bounty money. But external researchers will be for some of the other flaws patched, including Wai Yuan of Moyun Sec V Lab, who will net $10,000 for his discovery of a use-after-free bug in Chrome's sign-in protocol. The use after free means that the memory space wasn't properly reallocated after the protocol finished using it, potentially allowing a malicious program to literally invade the space. The other four described flaws also have to do with use after free issues, insufficient validation, V8, or some combination of those. Google isn't saying anything about the eighth vulnerability being patched. 0 days as far as the eye can see. Some other browsers that share the Chromium open source underpinnings with Chrome have also updated to the new version, including Brave and Microsoft Edge. Like Chrome, you can just relaunch those to update them. Others, such as Opera and Vivaldi, are not quite there yet. Google has patched more than a dozen zero-day flaws already in this exceptionally busy year. We're not sure if that's a good thing, indicating a greater share of flaws may be found, or a bad thing, that there may be more 0 days in general. Here is a list of recent Chrome desktop updates. They are listed from July 15th to October 28th at hot links on the website. Paul Wagensale is a senior editor at Tom's Guide, focused on security and privacy. He has also been a dishwasher, fry cook, long-haul driver, code monkey, and video editor. He's been rooting around in the information security space for more than 15 years at FoxNews.com, Security News Daily, Tech News Daily, and Tom's Guide. Has presented talks at the ShmooCon, DerbyCon, and B-Sides Las Vegas hacker conferences, shown up in random TV news spots, and even moderated a panel discussion at the CEDIA Home Technology Conference. You can follow his rants on Twitter at SND_WAGENSEIL. From BBC.com, Future by Sophie Hardach, Hardach. Marburg in Germany prides itself on being a Blindenstadt, a city adapted to make life for the blind and partially sighted as easy as possible. But it owes this reputation and its inclusive social structure to a particularly innovative school. At the age of 8, Leon Portz was gradually losing his eyesight due to a congenital condition when he was given his first computer. By the age of 9, he had figured out how to speed up the machine-generated voice that read out websites and other electronic texts, allowing him to grasp the information faster. He now listens to texts at 5 times the standard speed, which is unintelligible to an untrained ear. But his love of science only truly flourished when he moved from his hometown in central Germany to the nearby town of Marburg, a leafy medieval university town, to attend a specialist school for the blind. As it turned out, that move transported him into a hotbed of inclusive innovation. Marburg proudly calls itself a Blindenstadt, a city for blind and visually impaired people, due to its long history as a hub for accessibility. A groundbreaking educational institute for the blind, the Blindenstudienanstalt, or Blista in German, was founded here during World War I to provide opportunities for young men blinded in the war. The institute has spawned countless inventions for blind people since then, including tactile mathematical font. It has also profoundly shaped the town around it, turning it into a place where, as Portz puts it, everything is ideal for blind people. Some of the innovations that make Marburg so accessible also exist elsewhere, but the way they are joined up here is unique, Portz and other blind people who have lived in the town say. The clattering sound of guiding canes is ubiquitous in Marburg, as blind people navigate the town aided by beeping traffic lights, pavements and floors with ridges and bumps that act as tactile signals of hazards or barriers. Buildings often have raised maps or floor plans, while detailed miniature bronze models of major sites, such as Marburg's castle and town square, allow blind visitors to feel the entirety of each landmark. Other convenient features are a result of the town's natural shape. Marburg is small and hilly, making it easy to orient yourself simply by noting if you are going up or downhill. A web of accessible leisure facilities spans the city, such as a horse riding school for the blind, blind rowing, football, and climbing, and skiing clubs. The town's university has Germany's highest proportion of blind students and the widest range of degrees taken by blind people. The BLISTA and its students have driven many of these innovations, developing everyday aids, such as a foldable cane, but also working with the university to improve accessibility across departments. Law and psychology are among the most popular course choices, as the materials are text-heavy and can be studied easily with aids such as screen readers. Now teachers and pupils from the Institute are prizing open another field, the natural sciences, which have long been beset by barriers for blind people. "I don't feel like a pioneer, but I guess I am one," says Ports, who is studying biochemistry and computer science in Dusseldorf. He is the first blind biochemistry student there, and by his own estimate, one of fewer than a handful of blind chemistry students in all of Germany. Chemistry remains relatively close to the blind due to the hazards of laboratory work and the ubiquity of images, charts, and graphs. But chemistry teacher Tobias Mahnke, M-A-H-N-K-E, who taught Ports at the BLISTA-associated Karl Strehl School in Marburg, argues there is no reason why his subject should be so restricted. No human being can see molecules, no human being can see atoms, and yet chemistry education is so visual. Why? There shouldn't be any disadvantage for blind people, given that sighted people can't see all this either, he says. Mahnke, who is sighted, started working at the school in 2013. At the time, it didn't offer an advanced chemistry class. Since then, he and his colleagues have developed an array of multi-sensory tools and methods for teaching natural sciences, supported by the chemistry faculty at Philipps University in Marburg, as well as funding from the charitable Reinhard Frank Foundation. Mahnke has written a master's thesis in developing inclusive materials for teaching chemistry and published some of his findings. Unlike conventional science models used in classrooms, the BLISTA models are designed to reveal entire processes and wide-ranging relationships. For example, a three-dimensional model of a water molecule developed by a group of chemists at different universities can be squashed flat to encourage students to think about how it is depicted in two dimensions. A 3D-printed plastic model of a curving riverbed developed by Mahnke's colleague Tanya Schapat is intended to be held under a tap. Students can feel where the water flows faster or slower and how this shapes its contours. They then learn that where the bed is flatter, the water is shallower and therefore gets warmer in the sun, attracting fish and reeds. Most scientific experiments go far beyond seeing. You can touch things, something becomes warm or cold, you can smell and hear things, and in experiments with food, taste them, says Mahnke as he shows the models via video. In regular teaching, we focus on vision because it means I can demonstrate an experiment within 5 seconds, and it can be seen by 30 students. It's fast and efficient for the teacher, but not for the pupils. In 2017, the school offered its first advanced chemistry course, and in 2019, demand was so strong that it offered 2 classes. The laboratory is adapted to blind people's needs with electric burners in perforated metal cases instead of Bunsen burners with naked flames. Mahnke and his colleague Tanya Schapat have developed a method for teaching pupils about heat and fire using heat-sensitive swelling paper to allow them to explore the properties of a burning candle. A special sensor developed at the school in the 1990s emits a high or low beep when a liquid brightens or darkens during a chemical reaction. During the pandemic, Mahnke taught students about the COVID-19 infection curve using raised charts printed on swelling paper. When the school closed to stop the spread of the virus, teachers posted models to homeschooling students. Each model is tested by pupils at the school, further refined with their input, and produced in the school's in-house workshop. In recent years, Karl Strehl School has started accepting a limited number of sighted children who learn alongside their blind classmates using multisensory materials, which in their case also incorporate sight. Research has shown that children and adults learn better when they can grasp new information with multiple senses, and not just visually. Mahnke says that in his own experience, multisensory experiences lead to much deeper and longer-lasting learning. For Ports, it was not just the school that broadened his world. He fondly recalls moving around Marburg with confidence, assisted by beeping traffic lights, talking bus stops, and a sighted population very used to interacting with the blind. Bus drivers in Marburg are trained to stop to give blind passengers easy access, shop assistants routinely deal with blind customers, and many restaurants offer menus in Braille script. He's encountered some of these elements in other cities, but never in the form of such a comprehensive web. In Marburg, all these individual elements are very well connected, and there are few gaps, he says. It's also the mentality in Marburg. There's the Blista, and many stay on to study at the university, so there are many blind people, and every institution is confronted with that sooner or later. Uwe Boysen is a retired blind judge and former president of Germany's Association of Blind and Visually Impaired Students and Professionals, the DVBS, which was founded in Marburg. He attended the Karlstrahl School and then studied law in Marburg in the late 1960s. In his opinion, the sense of community and self-help that has evolved in Marburg plays a crucial part in sparking innovation. It gives you courage. It makes you dare to try out new things. That self-help spirit shaped Boysen's own educational path. Professional opportunities for blind people were more limited when he was a student, though he estimates there were about the same number of blind judges in Germany as there are today, over 100. Also, because of the war blind, he and his blind peers invented many aids on the fly, swapping recorded tapes of their textbooks and later using their legal skills to campaign for more rights. Bahadin Batmaz, B-A-T-M-A-Z, a blind software developer and accessibility trainer in Marburg, argues that many of its accessible features hold important lessons for innovation as a whole. One is that good design benefits everyone. He gives the example of the talking bus stops, which announce the next bus and its destination when a button is pressed. In his experience, many sighted people find this function convenient too. Similarly, when he makes a website more accessible to screen readers, its search ranking usually jumps as well, because the underlying technology is the same. Linking together technological innovations and the human and social factor is hugely beneficial, he says. If you're not constantly wondering how to cross the road, you're less stressed. You're not already totally overwhelmed by this stupid road, and then you're also more open for innovation and more accepting of others. Dago Schlein, S-C-H-E-L-I-N, a cited filmmaker and media studies researcher at the Phillips University, comes to a similar conclusion in a case study of Marburg as a model for inclusive innovation. He and his co-authors describe it as a smart city for the blind and argue that Marburg appears to specialize in an alternative mode of smartness. Instead of revolving around digital technologies, this type of smartness is more human-oriented. It centers on supportive interactions between differently abled people and on accessible institutions. Schillen and his co-authors suggest that Marburg might become a reference for prospective smart cities, with accessibility perhaps becoming one of the criteria for a city's smartness status. Schillen, who is from Brazil, experienced this innovation-boosting effect himself when he moved to Marburg in 2014. He met blind people interested in filmmaking and developed multisensory methods for teaching them. It strengthened my notion that filmmaking is a community effort, he says. Leonor Dreves, D-R-E-V-E-S, a blind software developer in Heppstadt in southern Germany, leads the Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics subgroup of the DVBS Professional Association. Most members of the group work in information technology, a comparatively accessible sector. But even there, too, many digital barriers remain, according to Dreves. Changing human attitudes is also part of the challenge. I think the most difficult barriers are the ones in people's heads. In my own case, as a woman and a blind person, I had to prove myself for a long time before my colleagues accepted that I can do it just as well as them. Around the world, blind innovators are slowly dismantling some of those barriers. The chemist Mona Minkara is designing an inclusive STEM curriculum. The computer scientist Chiko Asakawa is developing accessible artificial intelligence. And the astronomer Wanda Diaz-Merced is using sound to study space, to name just a few. In Dusseldorf, Portz continues to work on making his own environment more accessible. Sighted friends help him with his image-heavy textbooks, describing charts and pictures. Well, I'm out of time, so the other articles I wanted to read today will have to wait. Be sure to listen next week. This is it for this week's Vision News. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina